All right, folks, we're going to call the meeting to order here of the Telecommunications Regulation and Infrastructure Division, and we do, in fact, have a quorum. Representative Hopp, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
I just did, Mr. Chair. They look fabulous. I'd recommend their passage.
Representative Hoppy moves approval of the minutes. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Well, let's move on with today's bill, which is House File 635. And Representative Mason, if you'd take the front desk.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I move House File 635.
Thank you, Representative Mason. We're going to refer House File 635 to pass and move to the re-refer to the Labor and Consumer Protection Division. Is that satisfactory?
Exactly.
Okay, that's the motion we have before us. Your bill is before us now, and I believe you have a delete all amendment. Is that correct?
No, I have to. You should. Okay, we do have the delete all amendment. Hopefully that's in front of you.
Does everyone have that, I believe? Yes, okay.
And
would you like to move that?
I would like to move the amendment.
And that'll put the bill in the form that you wish to have it reviewed on?
Exactly.
Very good. There's a motion before us to adopt the delete all amendment. All those in favor, Chair?
Just a procedural question. I believe the motions need to be made by a member of the committee.
She is.
She's a member of the committee, or Representative Mason. And you moved that. Is that correct?
I did move it, yes.
Mr. Chair? Can I ask another procedural question?
Certainly.
And it doesn't matter either way, I guess, but do we need to refer this to the full Commerce Committee and then have them send it to the subcommittee, or can we send it directly? It doesn't matter. It will get done either way. I'm just wondering if that's... I don't know these things. I'm just...
I was told we could refer directly.
Okay.
Yeah, we were advised we could do that.
That's fine.
Okay. So I think there's a motion before us then to amend the 635 by adopting the delete all amendment. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment is adopted. We have the bill in front of us then, Representative Mason, and if you'd like to present your bill.
Thank you. Just a brief background. The Attorney General's Office gets a lot of complaints regarding the cell phones. It is their top issue, as a matter of fact. So this bill is addressing at least the disclosure that's provided to the customers. And in the essence of time, I'm going to turn this over to Jessica Palmer-Denig, who works for the Minnesota Attorney General's Office.
Ms. Palmer-Denig, if you'd identify yourself for the record, please, and proceed.
Sure. My name is Jessica Palmer-Denig. I'm the manager of the Residential and Small Business Utilities Division in the Minnesota Attorney General's Office. I appreciate the opportunity today to offer testimony on House File 635. The primary purpose of this bill is to offer basic consumer protections to wireless customers to prevent ongoing current problems that the Attorney General's Office is seeing with wireless service. The bill is also designed to replace legislation that was passed by the Minnesota Legislature in 2004, which the wireless companies fought in court and which was ultimately struck down by the Eighth Circuit on the basis that it regulated rates, which is a matter of federal law. Attorney General Swanson proposed this legislation because she believes that offering consumer protections to wireless customers is imperative. The Attorney General's Office has received literally thousands of complaints over the last few years from Minnesota citizens who are complaining about problems with their wireless service. In some of those years, the office actually received more complaints about the wireless industry than it did about all other telecommunications and energy utilities combined. Not every consumer with a problem complains to our office. And through the years, we've discovered that we can estimate that we receive a complaint from about one in every 100 affected consumers. So the number of complaints that we have received suggests to us that there is a very serious and ongoing problem. The primary focus of this bill is on disclosure. The first section of the bill is designed to ensure that customers receive disclosures about the price of the service, that they receive an accurate coverage map, that they know what any applicable taxes may be, and also that it's disclosed to them if the wireless company can change the price during the course of the contract or if an early termination fee would apply. And the bill also requires that the wireless companies give the customer a copy of the contract so that they have something to which to refer to. The bill also addresses two particular very serious problems that the Attorney General's office hears about on a regular basis. One of those is inaccurate and unauthorized charges that are imposed by third parties using the wireless bills as the carrier for those charges, and also extensions in contract length without notice or consent of the customer. This bill is designed to address these problems without being prohibitive on the wireless carriers. It doesn't prevent a company from entering into the market, and it doesn't regulate their rates. Those are the two things that federal law covers. The bill has also undergone some substantial changes since it was originally introduced in the amendment that Representative Mason offered today. Representative Mason and I met numerous times with the various carriers to hear their concerns, and we adapted the bill to many of them. They had concerns about needing standardized contracts nationwide, and so we removed some things, including requirements that things be in bold and in capital letters, because they said that those would be difficult for them. We also substantially revamped the third-party billing section because they needed some more technologically adaptive language, so we've made it easier for them to establish, verify, and confirm service electronically. And we also removed a provision we'd originally proposed about the wireline third-party charges just to focus the bill really on wireless service. Now, unfortunately, no matter what changes we make to this bill, it is unlikely that the wireless carriers and the Attorney General can reach an agreement because we have a fundamental disagreement about whether state regulation is necessary. The wireless carriers have indicated time and time again that they do not believe that state regulation is necessary. They say they are nationwide companies and it will hamper their ability to operate in other states. And they also have told us that they believe they're already doing all of the things that the bill encompasses. These statements, however, are belied by the complaints that the Attorney General's office continues to receive, complaints about inadequate disclosure, about unauthorized third-party charges, and about extensions in contract length. Very nearly all of the citizens who contacted the Attorney General's office attempted to resolve their problems initially with the wireless carriers and were turned back. And you're going to hear from two citizens, Kate Emmons and Judy Johnson, about their personal experiences with the wireless industry. We believe this legislation provides basic, common sense, ground-level protections for consumers, the same kind of protections that this legislature voted to provide them 3 years ago in 2004 and which they still need today. And therefore, Attorney General Swanson asks you to vote in favor of the bill.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Palmer-Dennett. And Representative Hoppe, do you have a question?
I have some questions. Do you want me to ask those now or do we want to...
Well, we move forward to the testimony, and we'll take them towards the end.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Judy Johnson and Kelly Storsinger, you want to come on down? Or Kate Emmons?
Yeah, I think Ms. Storsinger was unable to be here today.
Welcome to the committee, and if you would identify yourself for the record, please, and go ahead.
My name is Kate Emmons. I'm Judy Johnson.
And go ahead, Kate or Judy, and begin with your testimony.
Okay. I have not prepared a story, and I've not been coached, so if this is not as fluent as you heard from Jessica, please excuse me. I know that there are many fine people who work for these wireless companies. When I started having problems, unfortunately, I did not get to meet or talk with any of them. The people that I met with and the people that I talked with were incredibly unhelpful in helping me to resolve the problems that I was having. So I started with a problem, And 3 months later, I still had the same problem after trying to get this figured out with Sprint. And I said, I'm done. You know, 3 months of trying to get this resolved was more of my time and energy than I thought was warranted for the phone service. So I switched my family to T-Mobile, whom we love. So at that time, we got a bill about a month later and said that we owed them $450 plus some service charges. We paid the service charges and then wondered about the $450 because we had been with Sprint for 7 years or so. Said, well, how is this possible? We haven't changed our service. We haven't bought any phones. We haven't, you know, we still have this, we have Sprint. And they said, no, you did change service. And I said, well, what does that mean, changing of the service? And they said, well, you know, in July, we had this bill, and it was for $300 or something. And so then I called them and said, you know, now that you've seen the pattern of our spending and my 14-year-old daughter's new phone and the things that she's charging, is there a plan that would better fit? And they said, yes, it's such and such and such. And I said, great. So put us on that plan. And I said, so we love you, Sprint. We've been with you forever. We're going to continue with you forever. And they said, that's great. Thanks so much. You know, we love you too. And then we had a problem, and they didn't love us so much anymore. And then I couldn't find anybody to talk to me. We were put on hold. They hung up on us. And, oh, it was just so annoying. And when I tried to resolve the $450 fee, we went back and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth with them as well and tried to resolve it. And they wouldn't, and they were incredibly rude on the telephone. And so I said, I'm done. I'm not talking to you anymore. I think we have nothing more to say. And we did go to the Attorney General and did find relief through them. And they said, would you like to talk about this? And I said, I would be so happy to do that. So we have coached our 14-year-old daughter on you know, how long she's in the babysitting, you know, until the year 2020 to pay for her cell phone charges. And she's no longer doing any of that. And we're with T-Mobile, and we're very happy. But we are not, well, we're still a little irritated by how we were treated by the other cell phone service. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Emmons, for your testimony. Ms. Johnson?
I'm a small business owner. I am a private investigator, and our business line was with a particular company. Our cell phone line was with a particular company. When one of the associates was terminated in June, I called Verizon and told them that I wanted the cell phone discontinued. What could we do to reduce the monthly rate on it? They said put it into a vacation mode for 3 months, which I did, so kept paying the bill. And that was in June. By the end of the 3 months, I was getting billed double, like I hadn't been paying. So I started calling to figure out what was going on. And actually what it came down to was this. Every time that I would talk to them, whether the phone was in vacation mode or whatever, they kept extending the contract and they didn't tell me. So I was being billed for the full amount on a phone that was not being used at all. And I spoke to several different people to try and get it resolved. And when the straw that broke the camel's back was this. I said, I will pay an early termination fee. Tell me what that is. I no longer want to deal with you people. I want the account zeroed out. Tell me whatever it is that I owe. They'll take care of it. I will go with another company. They did that. I paid it in full. I received a statement with a zero balance saying, sorry, we lost you. You owe nothing. Everything has been paid in full. The very following month, I got a bill for a monthly service that they had just told me the month before that I no longer owed on. So I called the Attorney General and said, I don't know what I'm going to do about this, but here's the scenario. And they took it over from there. And I received another bill while I was waiting to have the problem dealt with. And when I called on that and told them that the problem had been referred to the Attorney General's office, they said, all well and good, but you still owe this money. And I said, I don't think so. And that's how I got to today.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's move on to our next testifier, Jane Snowden. Yeah, if you'd have a seat at the desk, welcome to the committee. And if you would identify the record who you are and who you represent, and proceed with your testimony, please.
Chairman Johnson and members of the committee, I thank you for the opportunity to be here. My name is Dane Snowden, and I am the Vice President of External and State Affairs for CTIA, the Wireless Association. CTIA is the International Association for the Wireless Telecommunications Industry, representing carriers and manufacturers and the wireless internet providers. Before joining CTIA, I was Chief of the Consumer and Government Affairs Bureau at the Federal Communications Commission for 4 years. In that capacity, the FCC, I oversaw all agency consumer-related issues ranging from the creation of a national Do Not Call registry to disability rights policy to consumer complaints division. I'm for you today to speak in opposition to the House File 635, which would place, in my opinion, unnecessary and burdensome regulations on the wireless carrier's customer relationship. Wireless, as you've heard, is a highly competitive industry that has successfully delivered lower-cost services and technologically advanced products in a short period of time to consumers. The industry's competitive nature has spurred a wireless renaissance that has witnessed the growth of subscribers up to 230 million nationally, which is an increase of over almost 100% in just 5 years. This renaissance was ushered in by Congress's decision in 1993 to create a national wireless framework. This framework has allowed wireless carriers to offer innovative options like national rate plans, which has significantly lowered the cost of wireless services and provided more consumers with convenience and added security that comes with the wireless phones. In fact, the Bureau of Labor Statistics price index shows wireless prices have dropped 33% since 1997, and the effective revenue per minute of use has fallen 86% since 1994, as wireless leads all U.S. telecommunications services in price declines since 1997. This price decline occurred while providers offered increased services and minutes of use to consumers. The national framework has also brought benefits to Minnesota. 9 wireless carriers now compete for consumers in this state. As of June 2006, there were over 3.5 million wireless subscribers in Minnesota, a 75% increase since 2001. Wireless carriers' revenues in 2004 represented approximately $1.7 billion of Minnesota's economy, while the industry employed over 3,000 people in 2005 who garnered more than $183 million in wages. In fact, the average pay of a wireless employee in Minnesota was $54,578, more than double the statewide and national per capita incomes and more than the statewide median household income. This framework, as I described, the resulting benefits are endangered by the type of state-by-state regulatory provisions being proposed in HF 635. These provisions would create a regulatory regime requiring wireless carriers to adopt specific practices for Minnesota. This could not only harm consumers by increasing costs, but we feel it is unnecessary, with all due respect, ma'am. Data recently released by the FCC confirms that the wireless complaint rate is declining. On a year-to-year basis, the number of wireless complaints fell 40% from 6,873 in the third quarter of 2005 to 4,149 in the third quarter of 2006. Again, that's over 200 million subscribers that we're basing those numbers on. The 4,100 total wireless complaints for the third quarter amount to 19 complaints per million wireless subscribers, equal to 0.00185%. It is important to note that a complaint does not necessarily indicate that a wireless carrier has broken the law or that it is even engaged in questionable business practices. This data does suggest, however, that the competitive, market-based approach that has allowed wireless to flourish over the past decade is working as carriers constantly respond to consumer needs. Now, you might be asking, why I haven't presented anything about Minnesota complaint data? The answer is simple. We haven't been able to get it. We have made numerous requests, but we haven't yet received the complaint data. We've been told by the Attorney General's office that the State Data Practices Act prohibits the office from releasing such data. Although we appreciate and support the need to protect citizens' data, there must be a viable alternative to the rigid restriction. Why can't private and confidential information from these complaint records be redacted, as I know I did at the FCC for 4 years, which will allow the industry to research complaint trends and target customer service areas that might need attention? The wireless industry takes customer service seriously. Since 2003, CTI's Consumer Code for Wireless Service has been an integral part of delivering superior service to wireless consumers. The code, which is followed in all 50 states, has helped consumers make informed decisions when selecting a wireless plan and has contributed to the continued competitiveness of the wireless industry. Carriers who are signatories to the code disclose to consumers that rates and terms of service, including any applicable early termination fees and per-minute roaming or off-network charges. Additionally, if a customer initiates a new contract or changes an existing one, carriers confirm with the consumer the material terms and conditions of service. Carriers also provide consumers with service maps, at least a 14-day trial period, billing statements that separately identify carrier charges from taxes and fees, and ready access to customer service. Moreover, carriers who are signatories to the code pledge to promptly respond to consumer inquiries and complaints received from the state and federal agencies within 30 days of receiving written notice. This has led to the industry to distribute carrier customer care contact information to public utility commissions and other regulatory officials throughout the country, including the National Association of Attorney Generals. The code has clearly proven to be an effective method for improving consumer education about wireless phones and delivering higher quality customer service. In short, it's a market-based alternative to the overly regulatory approach mandated in the proposed legislation. In addition to CTI's Consumer Code, major wireless carriers and attorneys generals in 33 states have signed an Agreement of Voluntary Compliance, or AVC, which requires carriers to comply with certain business practices, many of which are outlined in the code. Through the AVC process, the AGs created one set of business practices for the industry, not 33 different sets. Among these practices, signatories must disclose material rates and terms during a sales transaction, provide a 14-day trial period, adhere to certain advertising requirements, separate taxes and fees from monthly charges, and provide consumer complaint information on bills. The 33 attorney generals can enforce the AVC provisions by initiating proceedings against the carriers that fail to comply. Both the code and the AVC provide the wireless industry with the flexibility to universally address customer service demands in an ever-changing and dynamic marketplace. As technology evolves, the services that customers demand today may not be the services they want tomorrow. The code and the AVC give the industry the tools to adapt to those changing demands. That characteristic is absent in the state regulatory framework being proposed in House File 635. The legislation would afford absolutely no flexibility to carriers to respond to changing consumer demands that are the result of a dynamic industry like wireless. After reviewing House File 635, the industry finds numerous provisions troubling, but in the interest of time, I'll discuss a few specific areas with you today. Subdivision 4 of the bill requires wireless carriers to follow certain business practices when billing customers for third-party charges. These provisions would not only be a logistical nightmare for carriers to comply with, but they would also create a maze for consumers attempting to purchase goods and services with their wireless devices. In order for a carrier to bill a third-party charge, the third party would be required to receive a prior express authorization from the customer. Prior express authorization would include either a letter of agency from the customer, a customer's oral authorization verified by an independent third party, or a copy of an email notice verifying the changes and the charges. These authorization requirements would only deter customers from using wireless devices to complete transactions and don't actually afford customers with any further protections that they already have now. The oral authorization requirement, for example, requires an independent party to confirm the customer's identity through information unique to that customer. The bill does allow the customer to understandably refuse to supply that type of personal and confidential information to a third-party vendor. When a customer refuses to provide that personal information, however, the bill still allows the transaction to be completed as long as the third party notes the customer's refusal. How do these provisions protect customers against bogus charges? It seems that all they do are burden customers without any tangible customer protections. They create a marketplace for third-party verifiers, thus driving up the compliance costs for carriers, which translates into higher prices for customers. It's also important to note that the wireless industry is addressing third-party billing concerns through the Mobile Marketing Association Consumer Best Practice Guidelines. The most recent version of these, which seek to provide customers with a positive mobile purchasing experience along with the needed protections, were adopted in November 2006. It is in our best interest as an industry to get this right. To address possible abuses, the guidelines ensure that third-party content providers comply with double opt-in requirements and adhere to spending cap limits. The limits set dollar thresholds for customers. When that threshold is reached, customers are notified about what has been spent and need to opt in again to continue using those services. This practical requirement appropriately notifies customers of possible abuse, allows them to continue using services without creating overly complicated procedures, and effectively creates a triple opt-in to ensure that the customer wishes to continue receiving services. In addition to these requirements, the guidelines provide for standardized bill face descriptions, as well as the continued monitoring of auditing of common short codes. Now, short codes gain in popularity through programs like American Idol or Deal or No Deal, the industry is out in front in ensuring that each short code is compliant with consumers' best practice guidelines, including ensuring that services advertised by the third party is the service received by the customer and the billing is accurate. Wireless carriers will enforce these guidelines through regular compliance reports and audits. This is an example of the industry being proactive to serve customers better and reduce potential complaints. Mandates in House File 635 would also micromanage the wireless carrier customer relationship in such a way as to cause carriers to create separate contracting and marketing plans for customers solely in Minnesota. These mandates would not afford customers with any greater protections than they already have, but could drive up costs and make all cell phones cost prohibitive to people like seniors and small business owners who have come to rely on this technology. The bill, for example, would even dictate the size of the font the carriers must use to take certain disclosures to customers. These types of requirements could change the nationwide contracting and marketing plans that carriers have implemented that have resulted in lower costs to consumers and providing wireless technology to citizens who just 5 years ago never thought that wireless would be affordable. In closing, the industry is concerned as to why the Minnesota legislature has chosen to single out wireless with this type of onerous regulatory regime. Wireless carriers are constantly looking to improve the service they provide consumers. In fact, this is a vital part of the competitive nature of the industry. As one carrier provides a new service or contract provision, other carriers usually follow suit because they understand that if they are not meeting customer needs, customers will go elsewhere. It is equally perplexing as to what purpose is served by additional regulation. The Attorney General's Office currently has the authority to enforce consumer protection laws of general applicability as demonstrated by the 33 AGs who established the ABC. Why is there a need to add another layer of regulation when authority to prosecute carriers that fail to comply with current consumer protection laws in this state already resides with the Attorney General's Office? Moreover, the penalties described by the proposed law would be severe and wholly inequitable. A wireless carrier, for example, whose employee fails to provide a coverage map in one instance would be liable for penalties under the state's unlawful trade practices. These penalties are clearly excessive and unjustifiably harsh. For this reason, I have enumerated throughout my testimony, I respectfully urge the committee to oppose House File 635. I thank you for your time and allow me to testify and look forward to answering any of your questions.
Thank you, Mr. Stone, for your testimony. We will take a couple questions now. Representative Hoppe, I know you had some too, and let's see, Representative Yonke has a question or two. I'd like to get out of here by noon today because we have other obligations, so I know there's some other testimony in the audience here. We'll make sure we get the opportunity to do that. But Representative Hockey, I think you're on the list first here.
One quick procedural question. There's a short amendment. Do we want to do that first? And then, I mean, it's up to you. You're the chair, but it would get that out of the way. And
go ahead with your question first, okay. And then we'll take a look at it.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got some questions for Ms. Palmer-Denig. And first of all, I want to thank you and the Attorney General's Office and Representative Mason for working. I haven't been part of it, which is fine, but I know that you have been working with the industry groups, and thank you. The bill has, I think, come a long way. And my overall concern is just, I'm just wondering if this is necessary. And I've got a number of questions about that, but you know, if we start with the ABC group, and if we have 33 other states that are already doing this in a you know, kind of a voluntary way, letting the industry do this, and it seems to be working. You know, I understand the intent here, and it's a good intent, but is this legislation necessary?
On behalf of Attorney General Swanson, I would say yes, it is. The Minnesota did not join the ABC because we felt that the provisions did not go far enough to protect consumers. However, that agreement was to have nationwide impact, so we should be getting the benefits of that agreement even though we didn't sign on. And the fact that we continue to receive the consumer complaints about things that the ABC is supposed to address suggests to us that it is not working and that there are continuing problems. And I want to address very quickly the issue of the consumer complaint data that's come up a couple of times. The Data Practices Act in Minnesota does prohibit the Attorney General's Office from releasing it. It's classified as private data. But we do contact the wireless carriers about each complaint that we receive. So they all know, you know, if we do a complaint to Verizon, Verizon can look at the complaints that it's received from us and see what the patterns are. So they do have that information.
Representative Hoppe, follow-up?
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, would we be able to discuss the numbers of complaints? Are they going up? Are they going down? Or is that classified as well?
Palmer Denning.
I can't speak in hard numbers because of the data restrictions, but I can say that it's fairly consistent over the course of the last 3 or 4 years that we're getting about the same number of complaints.
Representative Hoppe.
Mr. Chair, thank you. So when I talk to the wireless carriers, and I haven't talked to all 9 that operate in the state, when they all tell me, and the numbers from the FCC all indicate that numbers are not only going down but sharply going down, and we still have numbers going up in Minnesota, is that what we're hearing?
I would say that the number of complaints we receive is consistent. We are not noticing sharp decreases in the number of complaints to the Minnesota AG's office. And as I said earlier, every complaint doesn't represent the entire scope of the problem because there are many people who do not complain to our office. We receive a very small number of complaints in relation to the overall problems that we usually see.
Well, one last question, Representative Hoppe, right now?
One last? Oh, right now. Okay, thank you. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would think that, I mean, by your own words, this almost is a solution in search of a problem. I mean, if we are basing this on perhaps 1 in 100 people and we think there's a lot more complaints out there,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess my overall, no one wants to have these problems with their wireless bill, but it seems like this is being solved on its own everywhere else in the country through the voluntary group. And
the fact that we have received thousands of complaints in our office over the last few years suggests that it is a problem in need of a solution rather than a solution searching for a problem.
Representative Jenke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To Mr. Snowden, I was listening to your testimony, and thank you for coming. And I know that most of the work on this bill was pertaining to Subdivision 4, which you exclusively talked about. And I assume a lot of this has been worked out since no one has come to my office the last week or 10 days on any of this. But that being the case, listening to your testimony, you said one of your concerns was the way of verifying these third-party goods and services would somehow actually go to the point of discouraging cell use because of the methods of verification. Yet throughout Subdivision 4, I see verification can be through the internet, email, or text message, and I suspect most, if not almost all, of our electronic devices now have one of those three things available to use on them. So how would that discourage the use of it if I can text message to confirm a third party back and forth, which I suspect most people, frankly, buying the services are young people that do use the TM quite often and frequently and are very well-versed at it. So how would that act? You actually said it would discourage the use of these devices because of Subdivision 4.
Hey, Mr. Snowden?
Oh, for clarification, it would discourage the use of third-party content, not the use of devices. I think if you look at the generation of 18 to 25-year-olds, very little is going to discourage them. They probably don't even understand what we're even talking about here because they never had a wireline phone in their homes,
right.
And they're just used to using a wireless device. What we're concerned about is the cumbersome process that is being described to have to be able to buy, for example, to text someone to American Idol or to be able to buy a product. Over in Europe right now, that device right there on your desk is your wallet. And that this country is either going to go that way or we're going to be left behind. And we want to make sure that we are going to actually be leading the charge, not following everyone else. And our concern with the language as is written in this bill, as it states now, is making a cumbersome process that will discourage consumers from wanting to take up buying these services by using third-party services by using their wireless devices. And I would just add while we're here, there's just one thing just to clarify. The ABC is not voluntary. It's called the Assurance of Voluntary Compliance, but if we don't follow it, we can go to court. We're taken to court and we're sued by the AGs in all states, not just the 33.
And again, Mr. Chair, just to follow up, I'm still not appreciating the how it would be more cumbersome. I mean, if you order a ringtone, it's downloaded, you get a text message within a certain amount of time that this is to confirm your order, and you email back and said, yep, and now it's done. So I'm not sure how that's more cumbersome, but I guess that's...
Representative Hoppe, to that
thank
point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for this point. So, for example, Mr. Snowden, if somebody wanted to use their wireless phone on Sunday night from 7 to 8 o'clock and vote for Small Town Sandy, who was Laura Osnes from Minnesota, so if they wanted to do that, then that's how they would use, to cite Representative Junkie's example, that's the kind of thing to vote for Small Town Sandy Sunday night, Channel 11, 7, 8 o'clock. That's the kind of thing they'd be able to do. And did I mention, Mr. Chair, that she was formerly at the Chan Hansen Dinner Theater, and she will be reprising her role as Sandy on Broadway if you all call Sunday night, 7, 8 o'clock, Channel 11. Thank you, Mr. Snowden, Representative Junkie.
Ms. Pollard-Denning.
If I can add just one brief comment in response to Representative Junkie's question. We originally proposed the third-party billing requirement with the overlay that is the same for wireline carriers that have third-party verification requirements. And the wireless carriers approached us and said that it was too restrictive for them and also that it technologically didn't adapt to the way that they did their business. So the amendment that you have before you today represents substantial changes from that original provision. We did add provisions that allowed the carriers to do the third-party charges through internet, email, interactive voice system, text message with a follow-up confirmation, which is something that they told us that they could do. In addition, we did remove the third-party verification requirement because they said it was not something that they would do in their business, and we wanted to make it, I mean, we want this to be a good bill. We want it to be meaningful, and so we wanted to make sure that they could technologically adapt, and so we addressed those specific concerns in that amendment.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick comment first. We had the two citizen testifiers coming in, and thank you for coming in, but I can't help but make the comment that you can't legislate courtesy, you know, a lot of times from the industry. And, Mr. Chairman, at this time, in the interest of time, may I move the A1 amendment? You have it, right?
Yep.
Okay, good. May I do that
yes,
at this time?
Yes, we can move it at this time.
Okay, well, Mr. Chair,
you may have it. I don't have it.
Okay, I'll wait. While we're waiting for it to get passed out, what this is simply a sunset provision for the legislation. The especially in the areas, definitely especially in the area of technology where we're seeing many of these arenas, the technology is still maturing, it's still cooking, the brownies aren't baked, whatever analogy you want to use. It's important that the legislature take a look at these things over, and I would just request that we put the sunset effective August 1st of 2009, and I would ask for member support.
Representative Garofalo moves the A1 amendment. Representative Mason, would you like to speak to this amendment?
I would speak against the amendment. Again, when there is litigation, sometimes it gets into extended periods, so this would make litigation, in some cases, improbable, or it might cut it off. So I would oppose this.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mason, I want to make sure I make clear what this would do. It just says that 2 years from now, the legislature, regardless of who is here, would have to revisit the issue. The language that we're repealing on 325F695, that portion that I didn't realize the courts had thrown that out, but that language from the sections we're repealing, that had a sunset provision in it as well. And again, because this is a technology issue and because things are maturing so quickly and changing, as a policy perspective, it doesn't impact your legislation at all. It simply says that 2 years from now we're going to come back and take a look at it. There are no changes in the substance or increasing the likelihood of it. There's no chance that it doesn't increase or decrease the chance of litigation.
again, the bottom line is consumers will still need that the protection under the disclosure in 2 years. So I still would be opposed.
Very good. Further discussion on that, Representative Grapple?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Representative Mason, protections would still be there in 2 years.
I hear what you're saying, but I'm still opposing your amendment.
Very good. Is there further discussion on this amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
The motion does not pass. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Grapple.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple questions for the testifiers on the legislation. Was it Mr. Snowden? Thank you. You had mentioned before that if there was one instance of an employee failing to follow the provisions of the statute, that there was, what was the long arm of the law that would apply, that would come down on you guys? What body of law is that?
Well, the penalty structure that they have in the bill would be very severe is our concern, for one instance, not to give a map or something of that nature to a consumer. And candidly, the best maps are out there actually on the website, and it's our interest. The reason why we provide maps to consumers on the web is that it gives them, we don't want a consumer to sign up for our service for that particular carrier if it's not going to work in your particular neighborhood. It's more cost to have you and then have you leave than it is to not have you at all. So we're for having maps, but in the way the bill is structured now, if there is one, if there's a single incident, the penalties are very severe in our concern.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Garofalo.
To the testifier from the Attorney General's office, is he right that if one, in the instance of one person making a mistake, that body of law would apply?
The enforcement structure that's contemplated by the bill is the standard consumer protection enforcement structure that's under the Attorney General's enforcement statutes in 8.31. It's no different from the enforcement of any other consumer protection law in Minnesota that the Attorney General's office enforces. And I would say, you know, we're not looking to penalize them for normal human error or something like that. What we're looking for here and what we do in our office is look for patterns of conduct. So if we notice that a carrier is routinely not providing coverage maps, then initially we probably would go work with the carrier and try to figure it out and only resort to litigation in the end. But we did not want to carve out this industry for some sort of special protected status as opposed to other industries that we believe are standard consumer protection authority.
Mr. Snowden, did you want to add something?
I think in all due respect, it's yet we're being carved out for special protection now for this bill, because the bill as it stands now, the Attorney General's office has clear authority to do everything they want to do in this bill. That there's, that authority resides with the Attorney General's office right now under the consumer protection laws that are in this state. So there is a carve out already being done by proposing this bill.
Well, I know we have a couple other questions from some members who haven't asked questions yet, and I want to make sure that people in the audience who haven't had a chance to testify can do so yet. Representative Saylor, did you have a question?
Yes, and a comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is to Mr. Snowden. First of all, I would really like to guarantee you that there are many, many 18 to 25-year-olds that know exactly what we're talking about here today. I've heard from a number of them. And I'm also concerned about what appears, you know, just in listening to your testimony, to the apparent association standards for dealing with some consumer complaints in just ignoring them to the point that the taxpayers are paying for these through the Attorney General's office looking into these rather than having it sufficiently dealt with through the wireless companies. Those being the comments, I do have a question, and that is, what do you consider the definition of a complaint? You know, does it have to be formal? Does it, you know, how is that written out, and what font do people find that in?
I think it depends.
Mr. Snowden.
Thank you. I think it depends on the carriers. I would say our first thing to get to your comment, and then I'll get to your question. Our first choice and preference would be for the consumer to call the carrier. We say that in all of our literature. We say it constantly to consumers and consumer clinics that we hold. The first place you should call is, and I went out to the FCC, I said it constantly, please call the carrier first. The AG's office is set up to do this across all 50 states. the states want some type of role in this, and I think is appropriately placed with the AG's office, and we don't argue against that point at all. In terms of your question and the font, it varies by carrier. What we would ask is that the carriers be allowed to do what their customers ask for. Some carriers, for example, and some consumers and smaller carriers, they don't provide bills, and that's not necessary for this state, and some carriers across the country, and consumers want that. And by legislating how this relationship is going to be, you change the entire dynamic, and the greatest concern is that we lose economies of scale by having a nationwide program versus a state-by-state program. And I would add that you heard the examples from Ms. Emmons that she contacted the AG's office, and it worked. And that worked without legislation. So the system is working.
Anything to say, Ms.
Chair, I just would like to further say, I just am finding it, I'm disagreeing with the fact that people have to call the AG's office for so many things, you know, to get the satisfaction. Granted, it's set up, and granted that it works without legislation, but why should people have to rely on going to the Attorney General's office rather than having their complaints adequately addressed through the company in the first place?
You're absolutely right. It should not go to the AGs. I think the AGs is, as I think you would even, the witness would even agree, is a stopgap measure for consumers to have, make sure they have that protection. And listening to the testimony, as we heard before, not knowing exactly what the problems were, we owe those two consumers an apology. And the Ms. Emmons, who was with one carrier and went to another, she did exactly the right thing. If she's not getting service on one particular carrier, that carrier deserves to lose her. And it's our responsibility to take care of the problem first. And I agree with you wholeheartedly on that particular matter.
All right. You had a question at that point. Mr. Poppy, and we'll get to Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point, and Representative Saylor mentioned font, and Ms. Palmer-Dennard earlier, you mentioned bold and caps and talked about sections removed. And again, I want to thank you and Representative Mason for working with the carriers. I'm just curious, and Representative Saylor prompted me to think of this, are the wireless bills now under this legislation going to be treated the same way as wireline bills currently are in Minnesota?
There is no provision. We're not regulating the way they structure their bill. There's no requirement that bills be in a certain font or anything like that. There is a requirement that one particular contract provision, the one about whether or not they can change the price during the term of the contract and whether they charge an early termination fee, that one provision we asked to be in at least 12-point font. We heard from them actually that other states were considering going to larger font sizes, 13 and 14, and we said we love 14, that's great, but we'll take at least 12, and then you'll be also in compliance with our law.
Short follow-up.
Representative Hoppe.
Mr. Chair, and I assume you're, and maybe I shouldn't assume, are you going to continue to work with the carriers after it gets out of this committee? Thank you.
Yes, we will.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just two questions on two topics, if I could, quickly. On the consumer complaint issue in Minnesota, it seems curious to me that we can't disclose disaggregated data in terms of numbers. I'm just not sure how the Data Privacy Act or concerns work on that. So if you could follow up with me on that. But I would be interesting to, I'd be interested in knowing, do we know how many wireless lines there are in Minnesota and what the percentage of the complaints that have been filed are relative to the number of customers?
I don't have that information, but I do want to caution again that, you know, we don't receive, it's not a one-to-one ratio usually of a representation of a problem. So,
no,
you know,
I can
see them saying, well, we have millions of lines and you go to only X number of complaints, and I just want to be cautious about it because we do have, there are so many people who just pay their wireless bill and don't know that they can contact us.
No, Representative Thiessen, Mr. Ira indicates he might have an answer to one of these questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In response to Representative Thiessen's question, I took a look at the Government Data Practices Act. And I'm looking at Section 13.05, Subdivision 7, Preparation of Summary Data. The use of summary data derived from private or confidential data on individuals under the jurisdiction of one or more responsible authorities is permitted.
Anyway, thank you for that. And then it kind of going to Representative Saylor's comment on this complaint issue, too. It would be interesting to know also how many complaints are resolved through the companies before they get to the AG's office, because I think that's the other comparison that needs. You know, we can say, well, why is the AG handling all these complaints? There may be, and maybe it's bad for the companies because there are a lot more complaints that they have to resolve. But, I mean, that comparison would be curious, too, as this moves through the process, I think. On the consumer protection, on that enforcement piece, I mean, the other, just so I, and I haven't dealt with this in a long, long time, so I don't remember, but one thing is that in addition to the Attorney General enforcing it, it allows any citizen to sue and recover attorney's fees, right?
Yes, there is a private cause of action under the Attorney General's office statute that would be available to citizens. For instance, to do a class, if there were a large number of citizens who were similarly impacted, they could form a class to sue their carrier.
Or an individual could sue for their $450 but recover their thousands of dollars of attorney's fees. And this, in just in terms of other companies that have that enforcement, or other areas that have that enforcement mechanism, that's usually a consumer fraud kind of thing, I guess without the reliance requirement generally, but consumer fraud types of places, this seems like it sets up kind of a strict liability. You know, so if you violate this, someone can sue, get their, and don't have to prove fraud, don't have to prove intent, any of those things, they just can sue, get their attorney's fees by proving a violation, and recover the $450 or whatever it is. What other areas do we have kind of that strict liability use of 8.31 as opposed to a consumer fraud kind of use?
Sure.
Ms. Palmer, then.
I don't have a comprehensive list, but I know from other cases that I've worked on, for instance, vacation travel package sales, which require certain disclosures and require a certain right of rescission period and notification of the right of rescission period. I believe that those are still within that same kind of sector.
Okay.
All right,
thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to be done asking questions, but I have to ask, if Mr. Eleff read statute that said that it is permitted to release this aggregate data, why hasn't the Attorney General's office released this data to the industry group that's looking for it, and why can't we know it in this committee?
I think I can.
Ms. Palmer, go
ahead. Question. There's a specific statute that deals with the AG's office complaint data. I believe it's 13.65. Then you go to the general provisions, I believe of 13.05, which discuss the release of summary data. And it's my memory, and I don't have it in front of me, that we can release summary data upon written request. And we would be able to compile something general, but again, it's summary data. It's not something very specific, and so I don't know that would address the same concerns that they have, and they already have the complaints.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, we were asking earlier about summary numbers, and you told me that they were about the same, but you couldn't release the numbers. So now if I request this in writing, we can get the numbers?
No, well, I'm not sure exactly, okay. Because I think when we discuss what constitutes summary data, I think that there would have to be some investigation into what exactly. I mean, it may not be that we can release the hard number of complaints that we got. We may be able to say we got more than this and less than this.
I won't tell anyone. Well, thank you, and I'm not trying to be difficult. I just... It raises the question that I think it had to be asked.
Do you have a brief comment, Mr. Snowden?
Yes, sir. Our concern just about the complaint numbers in general is that we appear to be operating in a vacuum, and I think as you pointed out, the FCC numbers are declining. The numbers that when we do poll our carriers, they're declining as well. And then you have to look at, is it a complaint? Is the complaint actually a violation of any law? And so we're making law right now. We're talking about making law right now on an industry when we're operating on numbers that no one knows. And I think that's very, very dangerous because we don't know if, for example, if this out of 3 million consumers in this state who have wireless service, are they looking to, do we have 1,000 complaints this past year, or do we have 10,000 complaints this past year? We don't know. And if those complaints, are there violations of any law?
Very good. Representative Garoppolo?
Yeah, just... Mr. Chairman, just very quickly, are you hard on the noon deadline there? Do we have a little bit of extra time, or do you want it to go right now?
A couple minutes here. So
okay.
Just can make it brief.
Not to revisit the issue of the sunset, but is there any chance, Representative Mason, perhaps I buy you a cup of coffee or something under the $5 limit? Is there any chance you'd be willing to revisit that issue? I guess I didn't want to push the point, but I'm trying to figure out what the opposition to the sunset language is.
I would definitely be willing to meet with you regarding that. But again, my point is they will always need that protection. So why would you want to have such a sunset?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, just to restate the point, because technology changes, the world changes, and so it's as a general policy sense, but especially in the arena of technology, it is a good thing for us to be revisit these things. Just a final comment, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate your patience. I find this is a very appropriate day for us to be having this conversation about regulations, about wireless. I'm looking at today's Star and Tribune. Representative Morrow, I think you find this particularly interesting. Mankato wireless firm cutting 150 jobs. And it's important that members remember that when sometimes we do these things by, the death of a thousand cuts, and the best of intentions that we have for the business and for consumers actually end up costing jobs and causing problems. So just again, a very appropriate comment on the very day that we're hearing this.
All right. Well, thank you, Representative Grapple. And I would note there has been a considerable amount of work put into this this piece of legislation so far, and from what I've seen, they've been more than willing to continue work on this issue as it moves forward. So I think we can keep that in mind. Representative Moore?
Very short. Thank you, Representative Grapple. I'm very concerned about the Midwest wireless layoffs that occurred, moving the jobs down to Little Rock and elsewhere. And while I speak in favor of the bill, I do agree with Representative Hoppe that we should be able to get this redacted information out to the wireless companies so they can have a sense of the number and the types of complaints.
Well, we're getting close, folks, to that time where we need to move forward because there's other uses for this room and so forth. But I want to make sure we get the opportunity for those who wish to testify in the audience, either for or against, has an opportunity to make their voice known. Is there anyone who has not had the opportunity to testify and wanted to say a few words?
Mr. Chair, while anybody that wants to talk comes up, I just want to reiterate what you said, and I do, again, appreciate the Attorney General's and the author's willingness to work with the constituent groups, and as always, your patience, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Kaelin Hoppe.
We're interchangeable.
Members, is there any further discussion about the bill before us? Hearing none, Representative Mason renews her motion to refer this matter to the Labor and Consumer Protection Division. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
The motion passes. The bill moves forward. Thank you for your time. The meeting is adjourned.